Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Today we're talking careers, and we're talking to Carolina Soto, who is a barrister in her own chambers, which is a pretty big deal. So we're going to ask Carolina how she got to that position, what it means, what she had to study, what tips are for being a barrister, and actually for having your own chambers. So thank you very much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. It's so lovely to chat to you, to tell you a little bit about how I got here. And I'm really excited to tell you a little bit more about me.
Excellent. So what is your actual job?
So I work as a barrister and I specialise in criminal law, and I also do some mental health care work.
And how long have you been doing it?
So I became a barrister in 2018. So when you do the bar exam, then you go through the bar course, you get called to the bar. That's the terminology that's used. So that was in 2018, and I've been working exclusively as a barrister since that time.
What did you have to study to get to that role? And how did you know that you wanted to be a barrister, or did that decision evolve?
No, so I always knew I wanted to be a barrister. I always knew that I wanted to be a lawyer. So can I just explain the difference between the two? Because I think a lot of people don't really know the difference between a lawyer and a barrister.
Please.
So, yeah, so the lawyer, a lawyer is someone that goes to university and studies a degree of law. The barrister generally also has to be a lawyer first. So they have studied a Bachelor of Law, and usually it's a double degree. But the barristers are actually the people that wear the funny wigs and the big gowns. So like you would have seen in shows or movies, the barristers wear those funny wigs, the white ones on their heads, and we also wear a jabot, which is a special sort of tie. So we have a special court attire that we wear. Now, in order to become a barrister, you obviously have to do a law degree, and then you do a course in New South Wales. So before you can do the course, you've got to do an exam. And in order to pass that exam, you need to get 75% to pass the exam. So they're really, really difficult exams to study for and really difficult exams to get through. My journey to the bar was not your typical journey, because I don't come from a family of lawyers. I'm the first person in my family to do law, and I'm certainly the first person in my family to become a barrister. And I think I'm the first Chilean barrister in New South Wales. So that, to me, that's something that I'm super proud of. So my path to get here was not common. And what I mean by that is, apart from the fact that I don't have any sort of family in the law, I'm a migrant. So I was born in Chile and I came to Australia when I was 5. Went to a local public school, very multicultural public school, learnt to speak English and read in English in kindergarten. So we arrived from, I'm from Santiago in Chile. We arrived in 86, and maybe about 3 weeks after we arrived, I started kindergarten straight away. So all that I really knew was Spanish and not a word of English. And then I eventually went to ESL classes. And for those of you that don't know what that is, it's where your English is your second language. So you're learning English as you're going. And I did that probably for about 3 years. So generally, when people go to the bar, they don't have that background. That's now changing, which is fantastic. But I think when we all think of barristers, we think of a man, and we generally think of an older man that's Caucasian. So for me, I think it's something I always aspire to do, and I think it's really important to share the story, to share my story, because I'm a firm believer that if you can't be what you can't see.
And this is exactly why I wanted to actually start this series of articles, because I think that unless you do have family or friends that are in a particular industry, you don't really know how it works. You don't know the ins and outs, what you have to do, what the tips are, who maybe you need to associate with, what extracurricular things you need to get involved in. And so I think that by opening it up and having people like yourself, and especially like yourself, who are not quite fitting the usual mold, it's very helpful to people to then get into the right career for them. Because for Money Magazine, you know, career is all about, you know, making money and helping you achieve your goals. And part of it is what your income is, which is through your work. So thank you for that.
And the other thing is, I really like the fact that I'm female. And a young female enter, well, I think I'm young. I mean, maybe after all, I might not think I'm that young, but I think it's important to sort of shake up typical stereotypes of professions. And I didn't set out to do that by any means. I just think that it's important to be able to share your stories. And I'm really proud of my story because I got to the bar, but it took years to get to the bar. It took years for me to get through the exams. They certainly were not easy for me to pass. And it really was seeking out mentors and just studying in the evenings until I passed.
So are you saying that you didn't get through the bar exam in the first time you went for it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not something that I often shared way back when. I was probably quite ashamed of not being able to get through straight away. There's lots of people that study and get through really quickly. For me, it took at least 2 years of trying for the exams and failing them. And I use the word failing loose, like I don't like to use that word because obviously I didn't pass the exams and it took me a while to pass them. But in hindsight, all those attempts of trying to get through the exams made me so much more resilient. And it really made me at the end of the day so proud when I eventually did pass. So all that adversity that I had made me so much better, not just professionally, but I think as an individual, as a mother, you know, I've got two young children. Yeah, no, I think it's important to be able to share that success does, people might look at me now and think I'm successful because I did get there, but the path to get there was bloody hard.
Carolina, if your children now also want to follow in your footsteps and become barristers, are there things that you, through your experience, could teach them that would make it much easier to get through the exams, for instance? Are there things that you think if you had a parent or a friend who was already in that role that they could have helped you negotiate it better?
Good question. I think you need to have a really strong work ethic because it requires so many hours of study. So you need to have that. And I think from a practical sense, you need to be really good at an exam environment, which I never was. I think, I mean, apart from the academic caliber that you need to achieve to pass the exams, you just need a whole lot of grit. Now, obviously, I had quite a lot of support from my family who knew that I was, you know, trying and failing for a number of years. But I did seek out professional mentors. And what I mean by that is because I didn't really know anyone in my family in law, I actually sought out people that I thought would be good role models for me when I eventually got to the bar. And they were a godsend to me because when I wasn't passing, I remember touching base with them and then just saying, just keep going. I mean, time's going to pass regardless of whether or not you pass the exams or not. And I always thought, as deflated as I was when I didn't originally pass, I thought, I really want to do this. And I really didn't care how long it took. I'm really, really stubborn. I thought, if this takes me 10 years, I don't care, because in my mind, I could visualize myself in the wig and gown. And I knew that ultimately when I got there, that I would be really grateful that I fought to get there. So it certainly didn't come easy. So I think for me, I just sought out people that I thought would be good role models. And I thought, I guess I took it upon myself to find people.
And was your family very supportive as it took longer? Did they start worrying that you're not going to get it and you won't make it in the end and maybe you should give up and focus on other things?
Probably. They didn't tell me. I think probably they thought, look, you know, maybe you actually can't do it. I'm pretty sure that they thought that, but they certainly never told me that. And I must say, every time I did get a result and I didn't pass it, there was probably a period of about 2 weeks where I was extremely deflated and where I did second guess myself and I thought, maybe this isn't for me. This isn't the right path. And I remember people saying, you know, if it's the right thing for you, the door will open. Well, it was never opening and it didn't open for a number of years. But then I'd get through that two-week period and then I would just sit down and reevaluate, how am I going to get through this? What do I need to do to change the way I'm preparing? There's something that I'm doing that's not right. And so I would reevaluate and I would just put some, like, you know, Beyonce, and I'd put all these great soundtracks on, and I'd take out the tabs from all the law books, and I would think, okay, I've got to do something different. And then it was just game on, and I just kept going.
And when you approached the different people to be your mentors, were they all willing? Did you have any people who actually said no?
No one. Mm. Not one person. And some of the people that I got in contact with knew me, I had worked with them, or they were a friend of a friend, so they knew of me. And then there were some that I actually approached that I had never met, and everyone, including the people that I'd never met before, were more than helpful and didn't hesitate in having a coffee or sending an email about what their thoughts were. So my biggest advice is reaching out to people, and not to underestimate the fact that people, as busy as they are, that, you know, they're there to help you. And people generally really want to see you succeed. That's one of the biggest things that I've taken out of this entire experience. They want to see people with adversity get through.
What were you actually doing in that time? Were you studying full-time to get to the bar? Were you working part-time to fund it? And was it an expensive exercise?
Yeah, good question. So depends. It's basically different for everyone. So some people will take leave and they'll study full-time. Some people will do it in sort of dribs and drabs. And I did it in dribs and drabs, not by choice, just because it is an expensive, it can be an expensive exercise. So to sit the exam, you've got to pay a fee for that. And to do the course, there's a fee associated with that because that course is for a month. But I was working full-time. I was working full-time and part-time, because obviously it took me a long time, so it changed and fluctuated during that period. But I have two children. When I started the bar exams, I had one. So I sat my first bar exam when my first son was 3 months old. And then when I eventually went on to pass it, because we're factoring in a lot of years there of not getting through, I was pregnant with my second son. So when I eventually passed the bar exam, I was 7.5 months pregnant with my second son. So I was, you know, waddling along into this big bar exam room, heavily pregnant. And I just thought, it's now or never, you know. I did get some feedback from people saying, I think you're mad going to the bar with young children. I did get that feedback from some people. And I just remember thinking, you know, having kids and having a career can be hard, but I've got a really good support network and it's something I really wanted to do. So I just ignored a lot of that negative advice and feedback. I was working at Legal Aid at the time. So I was in court during the day representing a whole myriad of people. And then I'd get home, feed the kids, bathe them, put them to bed, and then I'd start sort of what I would describe my second shift of the day, which would be studying for the exams.
Wow. So when did you decide that being a barrister was the right career for you? Was there some particular inspiration that you wanted to fight a particular kind of case, or, I don't know, inspired from TV or movies or whatever?
Well, I definitely knew I wanted to be a lawyer. So I saw a movie called Dead Man Walking, which is a bit of an old movie. It's about someone that's on death row, and I remember seeing that probably when I was in year 7, year 8, and being completely mesmerised by the movie and the justice issues that arose from that movie. So at that time I thought, I'm going to be a lawyer. And so I set out doing legal studies at high school. I was a debater. I'd always done public speaking. I thought it would be a really good fit. And so I did my law degree, and I did that for about 12 years before I thought, look, I'm going to go to the bar. And what really propelled me to seriously think about the bar for me was I worked for a judge in the District Court of New South Wales, and I remember seeing, and I was his associate, so you're watching and you're providing some assistance to that judge. There was a female barrister that I saw in a trial. It was a manslaughter trial, and I just remember looking at her and thinking and hearing her speak and speaking so eloquently and so passionately for her client. And I remember the matter adjourned, and I remember asking the judge, who is that? I don't know who that is. I want to be like her. Who is that? She was from she was not Caucasian, so she looked like she was from a migrant background like me, and that was the first time where I thought, you know, you can do this and be female and be from a migrant background. Now, that particular barrister is now a judge, and I appear before her now from time to time, but that's what made me think, if she can do that and do it well, I would like that for myself. And so that was sort of the turning point for me about pursuing the bar seriously.
How long have you now been a barrister?
So since 2018. So I'm going on, I think that's 4 years, probably in May I'll be at the bar. Mm-hmm. And I have literally loved every minute of it, really, truly. It's been hard. There's long nights. It's high-pressure environment. It's hard juggling kids at the time with the demands of court and clients. You know, it's not uncommon to get calls at 3 a.m. Clients that have been arrested, and you've got to go to the police station. So it's high pressure, and I knew that it was always going to be that way, but I feel like I've landed in a career that is just perfect for me, intellectually and in every other way.
I guess that's what keeps you doing what you're doing, that you find that you've landed in the right place. Are there cases that you feel that you've come away and gone, that made it worthwhile?
Absolutely. And it happens often. It happens often. So I still do legal aid work. So I was a legal aid lawyer for 10 years. Legal aid lawyers, when you work for legal aid, you're basically representing people that can't afford to pay for private representation. And I always thought, when I go to the bar, despite the fact that, you know, you can charge privately and there's scope to make money, much more than what I was earning as a lawyer, I always thought, I'm going to stay in the legal aid. I'm going to stay in contact with legal aid. I really just want to represent people that actually need good representation. So I think the standout moments for me are a lot of my legal aid clients, you know, people that have been arrested, unlawfully arrested, or wrongfully charged. The biggest highlights are getting someone's liberty back. Someone that's been arrested, they come to court, they need representation, and then you stand there and you get them their bail, you know, you get them out of custody. That's probably a recurring highlight. No matter how many times I've done it, being able to do that for someone is really the highlight of being in the criminal bar for me, particularly for clients that are females, young females that have children. So some of the work that I do is a crossover. So I'd represent people in the criminal courts, and then sometimes that for various reasons, a young woman's children might be removed, and I will represent them in the children's jurisdiction to try and recover the children back. So there are crossovers in different areas, which I particularly like to do when I can do it, so that you're moving across different jurisdictions to get a really good holistic outcome for a client.
What would be next for you?
So the big goal is to stay at the bar for the time being, to try and do a lot more work to encourage more women from migrant backgrounds to come to the bar. And then I would say in about 5 to 10 years, my big goal is to become a magistrate in the local court of New South Wales. And then once my kids are bigger and I have a bit more freedom, and they'll, you know, whatever things that they decide to do, my big goal would be to work in the International Criminal Court overseas.
And Carolina, what do you wish you knew about your job before you got there?
I wish I knew that there's actually quite a lot of help out there to try and get you there. I kind of felt like I was always on the outer, and I don't know where I got that from. I think it's because I didn't see people that looked like me there. But I think once you get there, you can actually play such a big role in trying to get other people to follow you. So I wish I knew then that it's quite an inclusive place once you arrive there, and that you have these incredible colleagues. There's quite a lot of camaraderie, even though that you might be against opposing counsel, that there's actually quite a lot of camaraderie in the profession itself.
And what sort of money can you make? Like what would it range from, like from a starting out barrister to, you know, one with, I don't know, many years experience?
It really varies depending on the area of law that you work in. So obviously if you're working in, you know, large commercial matters, you could, some barristers charge a great amount of money for their time appearing in court and preparation. So it just depends. Criminal law, generally you can't charge as much as you would for working in sort of a banking area or commercial work. And when you become a barrister, you're given an idea. When you're a baby barrister, you're given an idea of what to charge. So just to, I can't really give an answer because it really does depend on the area of work that you do. But if you do legal aid work, there's a certain amount that you can charge per day. But I never did it for the money, ever. You know, I worked for legal aid for 10 years. I certainly wasn't doing it for the money. And you can, you know, if you're a, you become a senior counsel, I know that there's some senior counsels that charge $10,000 a day to represent someone in court. So it just depends on level of seniority as well as the area of practice that you work in.
Right. And I know that I have read some statistic that, and I can't remember whether it was barristers or magistrates, that a huge percentage had gone to just a few schools.
Yes, so I've read a couple of articles similar to that. So the most recent article was that there's quite a lot of Supreme Court judges that went to the same school, a male school. And that's what I'm saying, that, you know, I'm sort of on the outer of that. But I do think that it's changing. From what I can see, it's definitely changing, and there's some really great initiatives across various organisations in the legal sector that are trying to encourage more diverse members to the bar and also into the legal profession. But if we're looking at the legal profession more broadly in terms of lawyers, I'm pretty sure that late last year there was a statistic to suggest that we now actually have more females entering into the law profession than we ever have before. So we have this gender sort of balance that's getting better in the law, like becoming lawyers. I do know that in terms of magistracy positions, so magistrates in New South Wales, I think we, I don't quite mean in terms of the statistic, but it's almost 50-50.
Wow. And do you find that once you're in, you've passed, you know, all your exams, you're there, you're sitting alongside everybody else, is it any more difficult to get clients?
I don't think so. Because the way that I've, not for me, I can't speak for anyone else, but it's not for me because I've always used my sort of cultural diversity as something that differentiates me from another barrister. And I think clients generally appreciate that. So a lot of my practice when I was a lawyer was in the western suburbs. It was Parramatta, Bankstown, Fairfield, areas that I grew up in. And I think people just want to see people like them. Ultimately, and so I've always used that, and not used that to get clients, but always just tried to be my authentic self. And I think that that's always paid dividends for me as a lawyer and now at the bar. I have quite a lot of Spanish-speaking clients, and I think it's really important not to underestimate word of mouth. And I think also quite a lot of the work base that I have changed when I started my own sort of chambers. So I have quite a lot of work from female-based lawyers that have also gone out on their own and have really appreciated someone, you know, with kids, relatively new to the bar. I've received a huge amount of support from females in particular.
And that has reminded me, I did want to ask you why, when and why you started your own chambers.
So I actually started it before COVID, just before COVID, so February 2020. And I did it for a myriad of reasons. I did it because there wasn't really anything at that time that I felt represented me. And I really wanted to work in a workplace that I was proud of and that I felt connected with. I had that at legal aid. You know, I always loved the camaraderie of legal aid and the fact that you're working to make justice accessible and equitable for people. And I didn't really have, I couldn't really find that at the time. So that was one aspect. I wanted to align myself with something that felt more like me. The second part of it was financial. So generally the way that it works is you would work off a chamber's floor. So you're renting out a room is essentially how it works. So you're paying or you're buying in. There's also the option of buying into a set of chambers over time. But I was really struggling in the first, 18 months at the bar, because the first 12 months you're a baby barrister, everything's pretty much free. And then once you click over into the second year, all the things that were relatively cheap are just normal. And I was working really hard in the first 18 months at the bar, but a lot of the practice was legal aid work. So in terms of financial earnings, when I took out my tax and I, paid my BAS, there wasn't a great deal left after I paid the mortgage and the childcare. So I thought, I've got to change the way that I'm working. I've got to work smarter. And one of the ways to do that, I thought, was to set up my own set of chambers and to start working remotely. So the overheads of paying the rent would be reduced. And I also then, created my own website, which ultimately led to more private work. So I felt like I was still working hard, but I felt like I was getting the financial reimbursement back that reflected the work that I was doing. So those were the big reasons, but the financial one was really a huge one for me. And I look back and say, thank goodness I took that leap of faith, because a lot of people said, you're crazy, you're really junior at the bar. No one does that. No one starts their own sets of chambers. Everyone, there's in crime, there's, various number set of chambers that people generally align themselves to. They never just start their own. And I started just ignoring people and just thinking, well, I'm the one that has to pay the bills. I'm the one that has to live my life. And I just went for it. And then COVID happened and I thought, I'm saving so much money because I'm working from home and I'm not paying those chamber fees for a place that I wouldn't have been in. So that's why I started it. And, I actually started the chambers when I was in hospital, really. If I'm going to be honest, I had a major surgery in February 2020. And when I was in hospital, I thought, I'm going to do this. And I think it's because there was no noise associated with people's opinions. And I was by myself recovering and thought, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I don't care what people think. And I did it. And I did it from the hospital bed. And then by the time I got out of hospital, I'd had like a really shitty website, quite honestly, when it started, because I did it myself to save money, but probably just enough to put myself out there and say, this is what I'm doing. And then as you get better, you improve and you get more confident and the website comes and then, you're promoting yourself in a different way. But I must say, I'm proud of myself for doing that and for following what I wanted to do, because, it's good for people to see other women being brave, and generally women are brave. So it's just good to be able to see that.
Absolutely. And financially astute, as you've proven. And are you mentoring anyone at the moment?
So I generally have paralegals that come and assist me in chambers, and I try and do that every 6 months and bring in new students. So yes, absolutely. It's crucial for me to mentor, and I get so much from my mentors, just an incredible amount of, great friendships have formed as a result of working with various paralegals over the years. And one of the most beautiful things that comes out of mentoring people is that you see this incredible progression in their careers.
Well, thank you. And thank you very much for sharing that story with us today. That's been really helpful. And I guess it's inspirational for a lot of women who want to follow in your footsteps, and for men, and just to get an idea of the journey to becoming a barrister. And I guess also not giving up when it's something you really want to do.
No, thank you for having me. It's been wonderful chatting with you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.